Does Jesus expect us to follow his example in every respect? Welcome to The Good Word. We continue our discussions on the wonder of Jesus. The topic today is the intensity of his walk. My conversation partners are again Paul Dibdall and Larry Vavirka. Let's dive into that very question. Is Jesus our example in every respect?
Well, it's one of those all or nothing questions, Alden. And whenever you say always or every, then people stop and say, well, no, wait a minute. Are there exceptions to
good, and
every?
I'd like to know what those exceptions are.
One I think of is as he relates to the whole issue of family. His own brothers and I think concern of his mother. You know, they try to rope him in, rein him in, get him to do his messianic mission differently. And Jesus says, "These are my brothers and sisters." He turns the focus from his own nuclear family system to embrace the people to whom he ministers as his family. And I think if we, in our ministry, were to do the same thing, to turn our backs on our nuclear families and focus all our energy on the people to whom we minister, our families could be included in that, but if we shift that kind of focus and don't make priorities to our primary mission field, which is our own children, then I think we would be doing a very serious error in judgment as well as focus.
Let me press that issue just a bit, Larry, since you raise it. Is it possible for a single person to be more effective in ministry simply because they do not have those family ties that are a distraction?
That creates at least a potential or possibility. I think the single person then, though, does operate at times from a different sort of base. And that base might be better. It might be lacking in some ways. That really depends on the person's situation, I think.
In my case, I think if I did not have the softening influence of my wife, I would be a significant danger to the world and the church, even more than I am now. So I'm not sure that it's good to take high-energy people and turn them loose out there to minister, because the higher energy you have, the more likely you are to steamroller people.
So we take the low-energy people, keep them single, and turn them loose.
Yep, they're safe.
All right.
let me ask a broader question. What aspects, and this is just kind of a personal question to both of you, when you think of how Jesus lived his mission, how he lived his life, what aspects do you personally find most challenging, most troubling as you ponder Jesus' life? I know that's a fairly personal question, but since we're on the air, we might as well get personal.
Yeah, if you asked me this on a different day, I might ask something, answer differently, but the thing that comes to mind first to me would be Jesus, his patience. And by that, I'm thinking of his whole life. The Son of God, God with us, who spends most of his time on earth in, from our perspective at least, relative obscurity, working as a carpenter in a carpenter shop. I would think that, I mean, I just think of growing up myself, how anxious, you know, you are to sort of tackle the world and the knowledge and wisdom that you think you have. And oh my, Jesus, the patience that he had. And it's exhibited, I think, not just in the fact that he begins his ministry at the age that he does, but his patience then with people, his disciples, for example. And it seems like the others that he deals with. That, to me, is rather what, astonishing might be an understatement even.
Now, I couch this question as that which is most challenging, most troubling, but it sounds to me like there's distinct admiration in your voice as you think of that aspect.
When I think of challenging, I think of something about Jesus that challenges me because I see how different I am than he is in this regard.
Larry?
Well, I'm thinking of something more mundane, but I'm thinking of Jesus and his pacing, his time management, his being an early morning person. Maybe that's because he didn't have electricity. I don't know. But I'm a night owl, and when you're up early in the morning, Alden, I'm just getting ready to head to bed.
Well, we've talked, Larry, that we always have the bases covered in school of theology, either by you at late hours or me with early hours. Yeah. So.
But I see him overextend himself. I see him go around the clock. I know that's familiar. All-nighters are not unknown to me. As a matter of fact, it's part of my survival techniques is to put a few of those in. But, boy, is an aging person, I don't do that as well as I used to or as efficiently or as frequently, and yet the pressures are still there. So I don't know. Maybe it's a difference between a 30-year-old and a 67-year-old. Maybe it's certainly I identify with pouring oneself into what one does and doing it with one's, complete energy and spending many hours, but I really want more rest. I want personal time. I'm tired of that pace and need a change.
But of course, and this is the next question I would like to focus on, Jesus took his personal time. He took 40 days in the wilderness.
I would like to think of that as a vacation, but I don't quite get the picture that 40 days was kind of...
No, but that is quiet time, isn't it, Larry?
Well, not according to Mark. He was out there fighting with the wild beasts, but...
It just says that the wild beasts were there. He wasn't fighting with them. They may have been his friends.
All right.
But the other thing is, Jesus got up a long time before day to pray.
Yes.
And he would spend all night in prayer. And see, what I find intriguing and fascinating is that Jesus tells us almost nothing about that prayer life of his.
Mm-hmm.
When the disciples asked for some help with prayer, he gave them a short 39-word version. That doesn't last all night. Now, I suppose you could repeat it 1,000 times, but Jesus didn't give us much insight, and that's where the Psalms are a much richer resource for us, and you have the full gamut of emotions there. And I would admit that I really didn't discover the Psalms, the depth and the meaning and the application of the Psalms, until I'd had some more years in my soul and discovered really how difficult the world can be. That's when the Psalms really came alive for me.
Jesus is one who had the spirit of prophecy, whose relationship to God was very much like that of the prophets, it seems to me. I think had a great deal to process in terms of planning, anticipation, guidance, messages to give, people to see, persons who were thinking in ways that God needed to engage. I think there was that would be a kind of difference in mm-hmm. quality, if not content, in what my prayer life would mm-hmm. reflect.
Now, it's very interesting when you look at when you have your prayer life, and it's fairly traditional to say you ought to start the day with God, but there are some people who don't start the day when they start the day.
Mm-hmm.
It takes them a long time to get warmed up.
Yeah.
And I think, again, C.S. Lewis, in writing to an American lady, said, whatever you do, she'd asked him a counsel on prayers, and he says, I'm no expert, but one thing I do know, you don't put your prayers at the time when you're most sleepy.
Mm-hmm.
You need to have it when you're alive and well.
Mm-hmm.
And I like our dean's comment, Dave Thomas, who used the phrase, he says, the purpose of your devotional life is to tame the soul. I like that, to tame the soul. And he was trying to get away from this guilt model. I got to put X number of times, you know, then we can start the day. No, he says, put a finger on your pulse, you know, whatever it takes to tame the soul, get you ready for the day. I think that's really important. And it will be different for different people.
Yeah. And if someone wants to be kind of legalistic about it and yet protect their evening devotional time, you can just remind yourself that from biblical calculations, the beginning of the day would be in the evening, not in the morning. Mm-hmm. So that can maybe calm someone's conscience.
That's
Does that work, Alden?
That's a marvelous rationalization,
yes, good.
Paul.
Thank you.
That's good midrash.
Thank you again.
Now, let's come to the very pointed question here. We have a few minutes left. But we talk about the intensity of Jesus' walk, intensity of his mission. Is that for ordinary people, or is that for preacher types, teacher types, people with a special calling? Do ordinary people, do they have reason for stepping back and saying, that's not an example for me? How do we deal with those kinds of questions?
It seems to me like there are seasons of life, there are times in life, that call for greater intensity. It's almost unavoidable. Earlier, I mentioned how I was impressed with the timing of Jesus' life, his patience. During those 30 years, early years of his life, were there times of intensity then? I suspect so, but I would guess that the last 3.5 years of his life were different in terms of the degree of intensity. Yeah. And that level of intensity is not something that I think a person can maintain throughout their lives. So there will be times where we simply go about our business as decent people, doing our best to live at peace with others. Mm-hmm. And then there'd be times where we would stand and speak, or be more intensely engaged in a variety of activities. Seasons of life.
When it comes to Jesus as our example in these things, I find a good deal of comfort, I think, in understanding what he models for us, or what he gives us as an example, is not so focused on how to live a perfect sinless life. I understand that he did that for me, because that's not something that I have within my immediate grasp. So what I have from him is the vine illustration, ways to maintain a constant faith in which I absolutely trust and depend upon him for his goodness to be in my life, covering me, filling me.
That's helpful, Larry. Whatever we do, I don't think that it's possible for us. I mean, I don't think it's helpful for us to be burdened down with a sense of guilt. Guilt does not nurture true devotion. A sense of gratitude, appreciation for what God has done for us, is what really enables us to keep on keeping on, and I would hope that that would be the focus of our lives. Next week, we will be talking about the tenderness of his love. Larry and Paul will be my conversation partners again. My thanks to both of them, and to Josiah Hackerott, our program engineer, and my thanks to you for listening in. For The Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.